Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us on this Christmas weekend. May each of you have a very Merry Christmas. When our nation was founded, there had never been a constitutional republic in history. Our nation's founders didn't want the people to have to put up with any form of governmental dictatorship that occurred even in parliamentary democracies like Britain. While the majority of the founding fathers were Christians, they didn't want us to be formally a religious nation of any denomination. Thus, the first sentence in the First Amendment. But they did know that we needed a culture, a value set for our new nation. And they all agreed the Judeo-Christian value set was the best available. And for the most part, our nation has followed that plan. We're now falling quickly away from the Judeo-Christian values, and our nation is being divided and subdivided. We are not one nation under God anymore. This Christmas season, let's decide to return to those values. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. What you doing for Christmas, Skip?
Well, hopefully, I'm going down to the gun range and trying out the presents that Santa Claus brought me. I hope that Santa has his federal firearms license dealer because, you know, I asked for an M4 for Christmas and I'd like him to give me one.
Okay, folks, stay tuned. We'll let you know. Maybe you'll be able to hear the bang. Here's what we have for you today. A news and comment by the Colonel. I'm going to discuss our nation's Constitution. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Next, we'll meet General Eric Wesley, who'll discuss our nation's future wars. Then it'll be time to talk about Christmas with Chaplain Scott McChrystal. And I'm proud to say we were indeed able to get an interview with Santa Claus that is pre-recorded. And we'll review both the movie of the month and the battle of the month.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join a conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. We will start with the news, of course. Take us there, Skip. What's the first one?
Well, Colonel, the Biden administration's permissive immigration policies have contributed to a record number of illegal border crossings, which has left officials in communities along the U.S.-Mexico border scrambling for an appropriate response. Making matters worse, a pandemic-related order allowing asylum seekers to be expelled for public health reasons was allowed to expire, as increasingly desperate authorities in El Paso, Texas, deal with the arrival of thousands of undocumented immigrants on a daily basis, they are now calling on the federal government to allow them to use military bases to house migrants. Without such a remedy, officials are concerned that the situation will further devolve. As it stands, a growing number of migrants have resorted to sleeping on the streets of El Paso. As Deputy City Manager Mario DiAgostino explained, providing access to military bases is not unprecedented. Just last year, a number of refugees from Afghanistan were allowed to temporarily reside in such facilities following the Biden administration's military withdrawal from that country. He noted that the current situation is a true emergency for the community and a federal crisis that's happening in the border of El Paso that requires intervention at the highest level. Quote, with that, they're going to need to do some federal operation, maybe like what we saw with the Afghans, DiAgostino added. As of the latest reports available, however, the Department of Homeland Security has not formally submitted a request to the Pentagon to allow bases to be used for this purpose.
Briefly, housing the Afghanistans who had helped us during the war in Afghanistan is one thing. Housing illegal immigrants, who include terrorists, drug smugglers, and criminals of all types, would seriously degrade our military readiness. Our military is not a housing service for whoever needs a home. If we're going to provide free housing at military bases, it should be maybe for military veterans, not illegals.
And the military's COVID-19 vaccine mandate is ending after the Senate approved the annual defense policy bill containing the repeal and sent the bill to President Biden's for his signature. But a last-ditch effort by Republican senators to get troops who have already been discharged under the mandate reinstated with back pay fell short in a largely party-line vote.
What a disgusting abandonment of those fine Americans who volunteered to serve in our military, but who elected to refuse a non-certified shot for either religious or just common sense reasons. those who voted against reinstating the troops who had been thrown out lack either intelligence or courage or both.
We are poised to approve sending a Patriot missile battery to Ukraine, finally agreeing to an urgent request from Ukrainian leaders desperate for more robust weapons to shoot incoming Russian missiles, said government officials.
Okay, if we're sending a battery is an artillery unit. So we're sending troops into combat. An artillery battery is a unit of about 75 men commanded by a captain. So we're sending them in? This would be a first.
With the war in Ukraine grinding through its 10th month, both sides are locked in a stalemated battle of attrition, which could set the stage for a new round of escalation. Many observers see the current deadlock as beneficial to Ukraine, allowing it to receive more state-of-the-art weapons from the West and prepare for new counteroffensives. In Russia, there is a growing sense of desperation among hardliners about what they see as President Putin's hesitancy and lack of a clear strategy. Military analysts note the fighting is likely to intensify again shortly as the soil freezes. Many point to Russian-occupied areas in the south as the most likely place for the next Ukrainian attack. The ground needs to properly freeze before you can move vehicles with more freedom.
Well, I expect Ukraine will attack. I hope it's with more support from European nations, and I hope that by now we're carefully watching where the money and weapons we're sending them are going. But go Ukraine. Beat Russia.
You think combat is dangerous? Well, videos have surfaced of an incident in Haiti aboard the Navy's hospital ship USNS Comfort that led to 19 people falling into the water and injuries to two sailors earlier this month. The two clips, posted to a Navy-themed Instagram account, appear to show a boat full of people slowly lifted from the water by a crane on the Comfort before tipping over while dangling in the air. Both videos show several people falling into the water below. The videos not only shed light on what happened, but also contradict prior Navy claims of rough seas, raising questions about the choice to use a crane to bring people aboard. The Navy spokesman, Commander Myers Vasquez, said the service is aware of the videos. We have initiated an investigation that will examine the facts and evaluate our processes with the goal of improving operations at sea and ensuring the safety of the force.
The clear question here is the idea of bringing a boat full of people onto a ship with a crane? Never seen that before. Not a good idea. I'm glad no one was killed.
All military parents will be eligible for 12 weeks of family leave following the birth or adoption of a child under a new policy set to take effect no later than January 1st. Signed into law last December, the act required that all of the services provide paid parental leave for both mothers and fathers, giving the military branches until the end of this year to make the changes. While not all of the services have those policies in place today, they will meet that deadline, according to the Pentagon. The policy change means that all service members are eligible for 12 weeks of leave for the birth, adoption, or long-term fostering of a child. That leave will be non-chargeable, meaning it doesn't count against their leave allowances. Birth mothers will still be eligible for maternity convalescent leave, as well as the parental leave.
This is good for the children and families, but we do have to ask about combat readiness. Where do these children go in case of war or deployment? Where do pregnant military females go, and who does their job on deployments? Tough questions for which apparently we have no answers. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a veteran, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk future wars with General Eric Wesley. At East Troops, take a break.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com, we are fighting for the American farmer. U.S. only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com Use your promo code FREEDOM and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Danny Gillum, patriotfoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correll with your home defense tip of the week. One item you should keep in your bedroom at all times is a military-grade high-lumen flashlight. I've raised four teenagers, and I've learned that just because someone's sneaking in your window at 2 a.m. doesn't mean you want to shoot them. That bright flashlight will immediately blind the invader and readily identify whether they are friend or foe. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and your information and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Troops, did you know that American farmers are going out of business because folks are buying foreign food? It's not good for our nation's security if we can't feed ourselves. We need to maintain our food independence by buying food grown in America. Patriot Foods is not emergency food. It's food produced by our farmers. I love it. Use the promo code FREEDOM and save 10%. Check patriotfoods.com. That's patriotfoods.com. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Troops, this past weekend I happened to spend some time with some friends who were attorneys, and for some reason our nation's Constitution came up. And we military folks took an oath to support and defend the Constitution. I've been thinking about it most of the week. You may recall that I spent 15 years as a prof teaching American government. I always began with a study of our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution. Most of my students knew nothing about those very, very important documents. While our Constitution is a legal document that says what it says and doesn't say what it doesn't say, over the years, we the people have permitted judges and particularly Supreme Court justices to change the meaning of the words in the Constitution. We have to stop this, or who knows what they'll say is in our Constitution, what they'll say that isn't there. Let me give you an example. I'd ask my students to assume we were a class in a public high school, not a college class, and that I was the regular teacher. And I decided to begin each day with prayer. Could I do that? They all said that I could not because it was unconstitutional. A few commented it would violate the concept of separation of church and state. So then we looked at the Constitution. The word religion only appears in two places. The word church doesn't appear. The basic document of the Constitution contains seven articles. The final statement in Article 6 is, quote, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification for any office or public trust under the United States. The other place is the beginning statement of the First Amendment, and it says, I quote, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, end quote. So, the only constitutional restriction relating to religion is that there can be no religious test for any public office, federal office, and there are a couple of restrictions on Congress, only on Congress. Congress can make no law respecting an establishment of religion. This and the Article 6 restriction specifically address the British system that we had just pulled away from. At that time in Britain, the national church was the Church of England, and everyone in office had to belong to it, and the church was supported by the government. So this was an insurance that there would never be a Church of the United States that was paid for and enhanced and supported by the government. Since only Congress could pass such a law, we didn't have to worry. This would prohibit it. And by the way, this only restricted the national government. On the day the First Amendment became law, 12 of the 13 states had state religions. Only Pennsylvania didn't. Okay, now back to the rest of the First Amendment restriction on religion. Congress may not prohibit, quote, the free exercise thereof. So, we're free to practice our religion. So the only people restricted are those in Congress. It doesn't mention people in the military or government or industry or school teachers. Regarding the concept of separation of church and state, that's not mentioned anywhere. The phrase was found in a few letters written by founding fathers, but those comments seem to refer to the national religion. And given that 12 of the 13 states had state religions, it's hard to believe that any such restriction was ever considered. Yet courts have found that a cross appearing in a school or on a monument on public ground violates the First Amendment. And our Congress and presidents have put up with this nonsense. We need to ensure that all those who serve as members of the Supreme Court in the future, that they will insist on following the words and original meaning of the Constitution. Those who don't like what it says can propose amendments to our Constitution. That's the only legitimate way to change it. Too many lawyers see the Constitution not as a legal document that says what it says and doesn't say what it doesn't say. They see it as a living document whose meaning changes with time. By the way, the recent overturn of Roe v. Wade on the topic of abortion being constitutionally protected was absolutely correct. I don't care if you're for or against abortion. There's nothing in our Constitution that addresses it. When the Supreme Court ruled on Roe v. Wade many decades ago, they chose to ignore the words in the Constitution. May I suggest that during this wonderful Christmas and New Year's period, every family take time to read both the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. I don't mean memorize it, but that'd be cool if you want to. But read it and be able to look up things that you hear about. We live in the freest, most prosperous nation on earth, and it's our Constitution that protects us. Get to know it. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. We get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Hey, what do you have to share this week, Roland?
The holiday season can be particularly difficult for military personnel and their families who are separated by deployment or simply struggling financially. The stress and hardship of deployment can create an incredibly lonesome holiday setting for both personnel abroad and their families holding the fort at home. In addition, many families who are blessed to be able to spend the holiday together can still experience hardships with the added financial burden that Christmas brings to many each year. You know, service members serve on all the seas and on all seven continents. There's even one service member in Antarctica. Army personnel serve in more than 170 countries. Sailors right now are manning their ships from the Persian Gulf to the Gulf of Mexico. And Navy officials maintain that roughly a third of the Navy is deployed at any one time. Air Force airmen are in the silos, by the planes, and in the command centers, ensuring the nuclear system is ready if needed. And the Coast Guard right now has ships out to sea. Personnel are deployed to the Middle East, and Coast Guard stations are manned 24/7 in case of a maritime emergency. You know, during the holidays, the military has had a long-standing reputation for watching out for its own and providing excellent assistance to needs of families in a wide variety of situations. But they can't do it all by themselves, and that's where charitable organizations come in. And they're especially prominent during the holiday season, providing valuable support and resources for military families in need. For example, Operation Holiday Joy was established to raise awareness and funds for military and their families during the holiday season by providing food and toys to families who are actually in need. And then there's Trees for Troops. They make the holidays a little bit better for thousands of military families with free Christmas trees that are delivered to bases throughout the United States and across the seas. This organization has provided more than 120,000 trees since 2005. And then Operation Homefront. They provide many facets of assistance, from the relief of financial hardships to wounded warrior recovery and appreciation celebrations for military personnel and their spouses. And of course, there's Toys for Tots, where the Marines collect new toys every year and distribute them to various children in need at Christmas time. You know, as we spend time with our families this holiday, let's take the time to remember and thank our military members who are right now on duty serving their country away from their loved ones. And I pray that you all have a very Merry Christmas. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Hey, thanks, Roland. I really appreciate you. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with General Eric Wesley about future wars. Then we'll talk about Christmas with Chaplain Scott McChrystal. And yes, we're going to be able to talk with Santa Claus. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You're standing tall with the front lines of freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Start with 50, take a break, do another 50, then stand at ease.
HealthVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HealthVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HealthVet.net. HealthVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to Vetted Veterans Program's mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
Nearly 30% of veterans have disabilities caused by military service. At Berry Law, we fight to make sure that every veteran receives full compensation for their injuries. Our team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees have helped veterans recover over $100 million in back pay from inadequate VA decisions. For a free consultation, call 888-883-2483.
Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome retired Army Lieutenant General Eric Wesley. General Wesley, a fellow West Pointer, served in combat at several levels, and retired a couple of years ago as the deputy commander of our Army's Future Command. He has since provided leadership to a couple of businesses, but he's still serving our nation, and we'll talk about that. So welcome to the show, General. Glad you could join us.
Danny, thanks for having me, and I'd be remiss if I didn't wish everybody a Merry Christmas on this great weekend, but glad to be part of your program and look forward to our discussion.
Yes, sir. Eric, tell us a bit about your time in the Army. Why did you decide you wanted to go to West Point, and what were some of your favorite, most challenging assignments while you were on active duty?
Wow. Well, Danny, that's a wide open question, but thanks for asking it. And, you know, I graduated from high school in 1982. And if you go back to that time period, it was on the back end of the 70s, which was a challenging time for the Army, challenging time for the nation to a degree, as we reconfigured the Army and postured to really take on the Soviet Union in the Cold War. But what was really happening at the time, what really inspired me were two things. One is what one could consider a drastic challenge or failure in terms of our international posture vis-a-vis the Iranian crisis when we had hostages in Iran, the failed rescue, frustrated me as a young high school student. And then the second thing was there was a political leader that everybody will remember now. His name was Ronald Reagan. I consider myself a Reagan baby. When I was in high school, I had his poster on my wall with his cowboy hat on. And my dad had suggested, hey, why don't you go to West Point? Have you thought about the academies? And I was immediately inspired. My dad was enlisted in the Navy, so we weren't necessarily a career military family, but I was inspired by the academies. And as a student in California, I applied there and ended up entering the academy in the summer of 1982, and was after that 4 years there plus 34 years in the military was really the essence of my career in terms of time.
Well, I know one of the things that you did that certainly caught my attention is that you were a commanding general of Fort Benning, Georgia, which is where the Ranger School is. And Ranger is a big deal to me, and almost everybody has been taking that course, and I know you took it too. What was it like at Benning?
Oh my gosh. I think commanding Fort Benning was one of the most rewarding assignments of my career. For a soldier, Fort Benning is a true playground because it's everything from beginning to end. It's where we bring in our new recruits. That's where basic training is. That's where we train our new lieutenants. That's where we do continued education for captains and lieutenant colonels in the pre-command course. It's where we develop concepts. It's where we develop requirements for future weapon systems. It happens to be the Airborne School and the Ranger School. For me, I was first at Fort Benning in 1986 after I graduated from West Point. And we really looked at Ranger School not only as a small unit tactics course, but a true leadership course where you break down a soldier to really difficult conditions, little food, cold weather, little sleep, and put you under extreme conditions to lead soldiers in very difficult environments. And so I learned a lot at Ranger School, but then got to supervise it as a course that we enabled there at Fort Benning. So Fort Benning's a great place where we train soldiers and develop the future Army.
Well, I'd be shocked if you didn't say that. It's amazing at all the different things that goes on there and done, for the most part, very well. You also were in combat a couple of times. Talk about those assignments.
I think the most profound one most people would remember was in post-2011. We had issues in Afghanistan and also the challenge of Saddam Hussein. And the executive leadership of our nation had concerns with Saddam Hussein. And we had what we call Operation Iraqi Freedom that kicked off in 2003. And I happened to be in the Spartan Brigade of the 3rd Infantry Division under General Perkins, or Colonel Perkins at the time, who later became the TRADOC commander and four-star general. And we were part of the 3rd Infantry Division spearhead from Kuwait into Baghdad, probably the largest, fastest armored movement in history. And as part of 2nd Brigade, we were the 1st Brigade into the center of Baghdad, causing the collapse of that regime. And that was in March and April of 2003. We're coming up on the 20th anniversary, Denny, where we'll celebrate the power and influence of the United States Army. In this case, it was regime change. We had our challenges afterwards. But in terms of imposing our national security interests on a theater of war, it was probably one of those most dramatic events in, if we look at armored history. And the Spartan Brigade ultimately took down Baghdad alongside our peers in the 1st Brigade and the 3rd Brigade of the same division. And so that was probably the most significant. I spent another tour after that as a battalion commander in Baghdad in 2005 and 2006, and then also spent two tours in Afghanistan.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. We're discussing our military's future, we're about to, with General Eric Wesley. Eric, I know that you're in leadership in a company called Parasanti. One of your last assignments was with the Army's Future Command, and your company is involved in helping our nation look at the future, particularly for future wars. Talk to us about how our nation should be planning for future wars. It's a whole lot more complicated than most people would imagine, I think. So take us down that road.
Yeah, before we get into what we need to do and what Parasanti does, I think I'd like to talk about futures and my role in it. In the last 5 years, I was in the military, starting at Fort Benning and then becoming the deputy commander of Army Futures Command. Futures is an interesting business, because what we have to do is look towards the azimuth or orientation of the national security dynamic, where it's going, and how do you define that so you can build an army against it ahead of time. And when I was at Fort Benning, and then later when I became the deputy commanding general of Army Futures Command, initially the TRADOC commander under General Perkins commissioned an effort called the New Generation Warfare Study. That is, how is our peers, how are they looking at the future of warfare? And one of the things we found was that both Russia and China watched how we performed in 1991 in the first Gulf War, and then in 2001 in Afghanistan, 2003 in Iraq, how the United States performed in a theater of war. And they started to tailor their armies, both Russia and China, in a way to take away the advantage that we had. And we very closely watched how China was building their army, and or their armies rather. And one of the things we found is that they did not want us to retain our advantage. One of the things the Army is very good at, and the military is very good at, is planning for infiltration into a theater of war that concerns our national security efforts and our ability to align sensors, shooters, and our ability to align those in a very effective and precise manner. One of the things they built into both of their armies is extended layers of standoff. You know, there's a lot of talk about whether social media has an impact, and what is it that the Chinese do with Twitter and TikTok and Facebook. That's their first layer of defense against the things that they do. But they also have long-range fires and efforts to preclude us from entering a theater of war. And I guess the bottom line that I would share with you that's important to take away is both China and Russia recognize that if you allow the United States, their partners and allies, to enter into a theater of war that we have an interest in, it doesn't end well for them. So they create these layers of standoff that make it very difficult for the United States to penetrate Europe, to penetrate Asia, to penetrate the Middle East, if we wanted to influence it on behalf of our own ethics, mores, and standards. And so one of the things that we have to be considerate of is we've withdrawn from the continent of Europe. We've withdrawn largely from Asia vis-a-vis Korea, et cetera. So our posture in both Asia and Europe has been diminished, and their ability to preclude us from entering those theaters has gotten much more sophisticated. So that poses a problem that how you penetrate a theater of war that is important to us is absolutely critical, and it's the number one challenge we face today.
And there's more to discuss about those future wars, and General Wesley's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, thanks for joining us for push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, most days. Take a break to stay in the area. General and I will be right back. Troops, America has changed, and if you're like me, you'd defend yourself and your family if necessary. But as noble as this is, experts recommend never speaking to the police without an attorney, even if you're the victim. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield, the very best self-defense insurance that I've found. They provide unlimited attorney coverage for civil, criminal, appeal, and retrial at a very affordable price. Check uslawshield.com and use the code FRONTLINES. That's uslawshield.com.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with General Eric Wesley about how our nation could, should be preparing for future combat. Okay, Eric, you're talking about the challenges of even figuring out how to plan. Let's continue down that. What can, should we be doing?
Well, let me just finish off that last segment by saying, you know, after we looked at the new generation warfare, where we studied what our peers were doing, the Army developed what is called multi-domain operations. It's probably the most significant rewrite of an operating concept. And for your listeners, an operating concept is a vision of how the Army and the Department of Defense wants to fight in the future. Our last major warfighting concept that everyone will recognize was air-land battle. And MDO, or multi-domain operations, was the most fundamental rewrite since air-land battle had been developed. But one of the things that was critical in MDO is that we have to be able to penetrate a theater of war and get into that theater so that we can influence it on behalf of our mores and ethics and our national security interests. One of the critical things that we drafted in there is this idea of convergence, which convergence is the ability to integrate sensors, shooters, and headquarters so that you can put the right munitions at the right place at the right time in order to influence the outcome of combat. And that's something that we're trying to develop now, even as we develop MDO in our warfighting concepts.
Well, I believe that. You know, that is so overwhelming. It's clear that we needed to have a futures command because we don't need just one or two bright people. We need a lot of people coming up with these pieces and putting them together to see if they work and then making them work. And even that, you haven't got to the nuts and bolts yet. What vehicle, what space vehicle, what do we need? But there's no point in doing that until you get through the how to proceed. This is a complex issue, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, one of the things that we came to a conclusion on, and one of the purposes of Army Futures Command alongside the other services, is how do you optimize the capabilities that we have now? One of the challenges when you develop a future Air Force, a future Navy, a future Army is replacing systems of record or programs of record, combat systems, whether it be an aircraft, a ship, a tank, is it can take upwards of 10, 20, 30 years to completely change your formations because these systems are very expensive. And so one of the ideas that we tried to convey with this idea of convergence or what we're now calling joint all-domain command and control is, look, we have what we have in many ways, many capabilities and different weapon systems, but the best thing you can do in the near term, if you want to increase your deterrence capacity against a near peer, is to optimize what you have in a very efficient way. We can never be dominant in all things all the time. It becomes cost prohibitive. So when we talk about multi-domain operations, we're talking about space, we're talking about air, we're talking about maritime systems, we're talking about ground systems, and we're talking about cyber systems. And so if you think about the cost of replacing all of your systems in all of those domains, it becomes cost prohibitive. So what you want to do is make the best, most optimum use of those in the near term, say next 5 to 7 to 8 years, so you can increase your deterrence capacity. That means you need to be able to command and control the capabilities that you have in a very efficient way. That is JADC2, Joint All Domain Command and Control, or this idea of convergence. That's the most near-term, low-hanging fruit where you can improve the performance of your militaries.
Wow. And the logic is very clear that you have to do it. And this is a never-ending process, isn't it? Because even if you decide what's good for today or for next year, how about 20 years or 50 years from now?
Modernizing has to happen all the time, which is why you need a good concept that gives you the azimuth or the orientation so that industry knows how to develop what the department needs. And so always having a concept that's an orientation, a goal that you're trying to get to, an army that you want to build or a military that you want to build that can defeat the militaries of the future is really critical.
I would say so. And you made a really good point. The military can do a really good job of deciding what they want to, but if they haven't brought industry along, we're nowhere, right?
This is such an important point, Denny. You know, in what a lot of Americans don't realize right now is we're up against some significant threats. We probably don't debate it in the political sphere enough, but the challenge that, for example, China portrays requires significant investment, and not just investment by the department. We're talking about research and development dollars on the part of industry. We're talking about think tanks. We're talking about everything from Google to Microsoft. It's got to be not just a whole of government, but a whole of nation effort to protect those things that we hold dear. And so industry is fundamental to this effort.
And therefore, it's got to be an American team that does this. And I suppose we've been doing it to some degree for years, but I suspect that's a fairly new concept when you consider how old our country is.
Well, I don't know that it's new. If you look back in, you know, the era of World War II, where the entire nation was focused on an objective, but we did have some good years. You know, you go to the post-war years in the 1940s, 1950s, even the 1960s and 70s, we have, due to geopolitics, we have the luxury in the United States of being protected on either side by oceans. But the world is getting smaller due to everything from communications to transportation and technology. The world has gotten smaller and smaller. And so to rely on those two oceans would be a folly. And what the Americans really need to know is we have some serious competitors out there, and it requires investment dollars in order to protect the things that we love and hold dear. And so those investment dollars is research and development. It's also the development of key weapon systems and deterrence capacity, not only in the Department of Defense, but also in industry.
Yes, sir. And yes, it would be wonderful if we didn't have to spend any money on defense, but that would be like getting rid of all your cops. That would be great for about a week and a half, and then you'd suddenly be gone. So this has to be part of how we live our future. I think it's what we've done through from the very beginning of our nation. Wow, this is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Eric Wesley. So what do we, the people, do? What can we do? What should we be doing now as listeners to support this, to be part of the team?
Well, I think, first of all, I think industry has to be involved. And it's why, as you know, since I've retired, I've been involved in a number of ventures in order to help solve the problems that the department has. The first and foremost, I think, is industry needs to understand what the department's challenges are. I mentioned multi-domain operations. It's not enough for industry to just wait for requirements to come from the department to industry. I think industry needs to understand what the problems are, because only industry knows what the technology looks like that exists within the realms of the doors of their companies. My own personal story, when I was still on active duty, one of the things we talked about in terms of optimizing command and control, one of the things I was trying to get the department to see is that we need to frame out what do we want for a good command and control mechanism to optimize the mechanisms and the tools that we have available. And we weren't doing that well. And so what we then went to when I retired is I said, okay, if we can't do it from the top down, what's available from the bottom up? You mentioned that I work for Perisanti. Perisanti is a company that does edge computing and data orchestration at the edge. Well, what does that mean? It really means, how do you connect the Internet of Things? There's a lot of talk about what IoT is, everything from how you get your thermostat to work on your phone to connect all of the systems in your house. That might be a simple way of looking at IoT. But really, the Department of Defense equivalent of IoT is, how do I get every sensor on the battlefield to communicate through a headquarters to the weapon systems that we have so that you can integrate weapon systems in seconds or minutes? And so what Perisanti does is it connects and does data orchestration at the edge to make sure that we can have both legacy systems and future systems talk to each other in a future operating environment.
Wow. We're about out of time. Eric, is there some way that people can stay in touch with you or Perisanti? Just because this is beyond interesting.
If you're interested in what we're trying to do with the Department of Defense, Perisanti.com does, like I said, data orchestration at the edge. But we're looking to collaborate with a number of different industries to help make their systems talk to the Department of Defense. But what I tell your listeners more broadly is that this challenge that we face with China is not going away. And if you love your daily life as an American, if you love what America is about and what we can achieve every day and the freedoms that we believe in, we have to deter against nations that don't necessarily believe in those things. And so this, like I said earlier, this is a whole of nation issue. It's not just a whole of government, and we need industry involved.
Yes, sir. You are right. Eric, thank you. Thank you for joining us today, and thank you for your service to our nation when you're in uniform. And now we've got to have you back, because this is a conversation that needs to continue. This is an awesome topic, and I really appreciate you joining us.
Well, Danny, it's been a blessing to be with you, and I'll come back anytime. Good luck to you in the future, and Merry Christmas to you and your family and all those who are listening.
Thank you, brother. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Chaplain Scott McChrystal about the meaning of Christmas. Then, this is scheduled, we have an interview with Santa Claus. And finally, we'll discuss the bowl games that some Service Academy football teams are playing in. And of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for jumping jacks, do 50 good ones, grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.